So yeah, back again, a little bit later than anticipated. After getting out of the taxi, we went to see Jonathan Wateridge at the All Visual Arts, and then we went to another party at the, well, I call it a party, it was actually an opening, at the place called the Return of the Nobleman, just near Freeze. So it's actually the next morning, so how are you feeling? Actually, it's not even that, it's the next afternoon, isn't it? How are you feeling, Xavier?
I'm feeling good, thank you. No hangovers where I'm concerned.
But you did stop off in Peckham for a quarter pounder with cheese.
Indeed, yeah. Ashley Camberwell, that saved me. That sorted me out.
So, okay, enough about London's beef burger scene. Let's talk about the art scene. So we're actually now in the gallery again, where we're showing the work. So I thought it'd be interesting just to talk about some of the artists that we're showing. We're showing 35, so we can't really talk about them all. But who would you like to talk about? Who do you think's worthy of mention? Obviously, they all are. But
yeah, of course, they're all worthy of mention. Well, I think the area that we're standing in, we've got a good setup. We've got a small Kira Bennett painting, a photograph by Oleg Tolstoy, a large-scale painting by Tom Ormond, an installation by Nika Nilova. Beyond that, I can see an Oliver Clegg. And to my left is a John Stark. We're setting up a really good relationship, I think, between the Nika Nilova and the John Stark. Nika makes these large-scale installations that tend to use reclaimed wood and then cast objects. So this piece here, which is actually called The Offering, consists of a wooden structure, almost a tiered structure. And then resting upon it, we have casts of what people assume to be unicorn's horns. They're actually horns from an endangered species of whale. And throughout the centuries, whenever these horns have been found, very often people it's propagated the myth of the existence of unicorns. Nika's work is very much about memory. Histories, implied histories, actual histories, or imagined histories. And so she combines the found with the made. She's a very, very interesting young Russian artist who I first saw at her Slade MA show last year, 2010. Curated her into my annual graduate show called Young Gods at the Gallery. And in the meantime, she also got into Saatchi's New Sensations and won that prize. And since then, I've put her into the Saatchi collection, and she's gone on from strength to strength.
So what about the stuff on the floor, which looks like it's fallen off and broken? Is that the case?
Well, this is an ongoing question that Nika has with her work, and that's she tends to leave these elements around, so it does look like something might have dropped off. So I guess that creates the idea that we've come across a found actual setup that's been around for a while. And so, yes, it might have had a mishap, and that's what we've got to assume.
So maybe slightly suggestive of danger and something gone awry rather than just maybe a drunk person having walked into the thing.
Yeah, I think ordinarily with us it's probably more likely to be a drunk person at one of our openings, but then again, coming to the West End, it's a far more salubrious setup.
So if any of our listeners are working in the cleaning up business, what would you tell anyone working in the cleaning up business if they came across this?
Stay away from Nika Nilova installations and Tessa Farmer installations.
Okay, that's good.
So, yeah, moving on to Starkey then. So we were discussing Nika's piece, The Offering, and of course there's a very strong sense of the ritualistic and spiritual and religious offerings in John's work. This piece we're looking at is a circular painting. He's a master technician, graduate from the Royal Academy, and we're looking at something that we could consider has there's been an offering, some sort of funeral rites, I think, rites of passage. There are perhaps burnt skeletons on a kind of wooden structure. We could be looking at something that's happened in the past, something that's probably quite primitive, quite archaic, but then again, it could be a futuristic scene as well.
And so I think one of the great things about John is his colouring and his use of light. So this is there's a full moon out, but there's a lot of clouds. There's a lot of pinkness in the sky, but also a lot of dark blue. I mean, what is the pink stuff? Is it a fire, do you think, or is it something less obvious? Why is the cloud that pink?
Yeah, well, for me, it implies a sense of the apocalyptic. But also, there's a reference to popular culture, to album covers, for example. The term "boy's bedroom posters" has been used. So there's this combination of the art historical, high art, and then low art and popular culture. So I think, and then you could even take that further and consider that it could have references to fantasy art as well.
So does John like being called, you know, being compared to boy bedroom art posters, do you think? Because when he has a big passion for Italian painters from the 1660s, but boy bedroom art maybe not be quite so such the kind of praise that he's looking for, even though I guess in the end it is praise.
In actual fact, he embraces it 100%, and this term was used in a 4-star review that we had in Time Out for his one-person show 2 years ago at the gallery. And I mean, he was really happy that the critic picked up on this element of his work. And as I said, it's not just about the historical; it's also about the contemporary as well, and about popular culture. So a good combination of high and low, really.
So should we walk through the 22,000 square foot space, or maybe we should run so it doesn't get boring?
It hasn't already.
We're walking past some Hugh Mendes now, Amy Winehouse, Osama bin Laden, Elizabeth Taylor. Hugh Mendes does obituaries primarily, and actually I did a podcast interview with him and Gordon Chung only the other week, so you can listen to that to actually hear it from the Mendes mouth. One thing that happened to Hugh very recently was that he sold a picture to Jerry Hall, so he's very excited about that, and I think Jerry Hall was very excited about it too. But let's carry on. Dominic, yeah, I mean, do you want to talk about Dominic? Another unicorn, somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Again, we're in the vicinity of Nikonilova, so the painting's called Unicorn. It's a small painting at 30 by 25 centimetres, and we've got this quite a beautiful female figure with a unicorn. That might sound contradictory,
like,
but
in the middle of a sewage kind of outlet.
Yeah, so she's within perhaps quite a psychedelic sort of natural environment. And Dominic actually works from the woods in Dorset. I've known him for a very long time, since he had a studio in Brixton, and his work is in perhaps a folk tradition. If you think Peter Doig, Ryan Mosley, that's the sort of territory. And it's intriguing that although he was from the Dorset area originally, I believe, he cut his teeth in London at Chelsea Art College and then ended up moving back there into an old woodsman's cottage in a clearing in the woods. And so he has material for his work at his fingertips, literally on his doorstep. So there's something quite magical about his work. It could be apparitions. There's a combination of horror and beauty. We've got this beautiful figure, but there's a strong sense of trepidation in her facial expression. She's looking beyond the picture frame, so there's an implication of something quite threatening beyond. His work, I read The Magus very recently by John Fowles, and it just made me think of Dominic Shepherd all the way through. So if you've read that, then think Dominic Shepherd.
And if you haven't, buy it and then think Dominic Shepherd. So, we are now into the main hall. Let's talk about Adam Dix, who's a guy who we haven't worked with before, but we're both big fans of. And we stood around exactly where we are now yesterday talking to Adam about his influences and stuff. So let's hear, can you remember what his influences are?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, technically it's very interesting. It's pared down work. It's subtle application of oil and of glazes, and there's a sense of nostalgia about the work. So he's very interested in communications. So the origination of and then the development of technological communication in particular. So We have these figures with computers, radars, perhaps kind of spaceship communication centers, and it's almost as if there's a sense of worship. I think that it's about man's relationship with technology, and not only how it can help us and aid us, but also isolate us. And perhaps, I mean, this is something that's prevalent with a lot of work that we tend to go for, thinking back to John Stark and Nika Nilova again, and there's a sense of ritual about the work. I asked Adam if he's debunking religion and spirituality to some degree, and he wouldn't quite agree, but I would suggest that he is. So I look forward to taking that up again with him in the near future. But as Simon said, an artist that we're working with for the first time, even though we've followed his work for a couple of years or so now, I remember his graduate show, seems to be doing very well, and we're hoping that that he's going to be going into several of our collectors' collections.
Yeah, indeed. And he was saying that the initial influence was the Cold War, and then from that he was looking at how he could represent the Cold War in kind of paintings and make it feel evocative of that period, I guess. So, okay, let's have a look at the Scatterhang. Scatterhang, we've got about 15 works by various different artists. We've got one by Adam Dix here. We've got another couple by John Stark. Let's talk about, say, James Jessop, who's an artist that both Xavier and I have shown over the years. And we've got a very large piece of his standing opposite us called The Horror. Oh, no, I think it's just called Horror. And the one we're looking at right now is called Kong Lives. And it's basically a kind of fairly kind of day-glow-colored King Kong. Just one imagines standing on top of the Empire State Building, even though you can't see that because it's a very much a close-up of his face, with four biplanes flying in the area, one especially firing right at him. Kong looks pretty angry. So what can we say about James Jessop?
Well, there's a lot to be said about James Jessop, but we'll just say a little bit. He's a very unique artist and a very unique character. And someone that Simon and I think a lot of. And yes, I suppose there's a relation here to Adam Dix to a degree in terms of subject matter and era. There's not such a strong sense of nostalgia in James's work, but he does, he alights on, well, painting, but as in old master painting, but in a very disguised way, but also film posters, pulp fiction, book covers, and he tends to lift characters from them and then upscale them and employ them in, generally very large-scale paintings. So there's also a combination of image and text, which is a personal interest of mine in work generally. And being a very experienced graffiti writer, he's obsessed by graffiti text. And puts them in combination with these appropriated figures. They tend to be, well, this piece is called Horror, but he's interested in horror, slash horror, etc., which I suppose is more Simon's area of expertise, being a fairly horrific film director, producer, writer.
Yeah, I actually don't think James really likes horror films. I think he gets a bit scared by them, but I think he does like the imagery and a lot of the stuff that he actually writes, paints about is from, again, magazines from the 50s or posters from the 50s. So that there is something quite romantic about them, even though he tends to mix in a bit of graffiti writing with them to give them a kind of modern edge. But yeah, well worth a look. I think he's been in a couple of Saatchi shows over the years, and is someone who's very much on the scene and does a bit of drum and bass DJing. If you like that kind of thing. So, okay, should we talk about one other person, one other artist?
Well, perhaps the Scatterhang as a whole.
Okay. Well, Sam Jackson, we've got there. Sam Jackson, who these are all on board. Again, someone we both discovered at the Royal Academy at the same time, the graduation show. Was it 5 years ago, actually?
2007.
Bloody hell. He variously does portraits of men, women, children, and usually some fairly pornographic stuff as well. Here I think we've got two men, one wearing a mask, and then what's happening in the third piece, Xavier?
Yeah, that's the most graphic piece, shall we say. But yeah, as you say, there's two portraits. There's a strong, I mean, again, he's a great painter, a great technical painter, which is something that obviously both of us respond to very much, and something that we've seen in John Stark, Sam Jackson. Also, we've got it here with Emma Bennett, Gavin Nolan, Francesca Lowe with a wonderful monumental painting over in the corner there. But yeah, with Sam, it's a very interesting combination of portraits and really graphic sexual material. So I suppose they're quite psychological as well. It's about the human condition. There tends to be a strong sense of anxiety, neurosis, and power in varying degrees within the paintings. There's an old masterly sense to the palette. They can tend to be very dark. Think kind of Rembrandt palette, lots of
that one's quite umbers. It doesn't have any of his usual kind of gloss or resin, does it?
No, much less than usual. He tends to gloss them over once he's finished painting. I mean, this piece here, Life is Dangerous, is a wonderful painting, which is unusually on canvas. It's quite a daunting sort of painting, as there's a sense of the masochistic about it, with this figure with eye mask and what looks to be needles coming out of his mouth. But it's a wonderful little painting rather. And then we've Eric Tideman, a really, really strong Norwegian artist that I first saw at the Slade again, probably 2005, maybe earlier. He's in this scatterhang. We've got Ollie Clegg for the first time we've worked with him, even though I've known him a while. I actually did my master's with him. Emma Bennett, as mentioned, a very interesting painter who, again, really embraces the art historical. She appropriates Dutch masters as well as elements from Italian painting and combines them with black monochromatic colour grounds. So there's a sense of sort of modernism meeting historical representational work. We've also got Luke Jackson here, Sam's brother. Both of them have sold this week. They were the first brothers to graduate together in the history of the Royal Academy. So what we've done here, we've got a scatterhang that enables us to present about 15 artists or so with smaller work. So we've, enables us to open things up a bit and gives a bit more information to the viewer.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed that and maybe see you here. Turn it off.